Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, I'm Tom Butler.
I'm Brendan Duffy.
And I'm Tom Wheatley.
And you're listening to the James Bond A to Z podcast.
Join us as three lifelong 007 fans go on a journey of discovery.
We're on a mission to discover everything we can about cinema's greatest spy films.
By learning about the people who made them, in front of the camera and behind.
The James Bond A to Z podcast is in no way affiliated with James Bond, Eon, or the Fleming Estate. We've researched each episode as extensively as we can, but our information does come from a range of sources. We do our best to make sure the information is accurate, but sometimes we can get it wrong. If you want to correct us on something or add some more detail, email us at podcast@jamesbondatoz.co.uk.
Hello and welcome to the James Bond A to Z podcast, where L is for Leiter, Felix Leiter, James Bond's trusted ally who's appeared in 10 of the 25 official 007 films so far, played by 7 different actors. My name is Tom Butler, and joining me as we explore the many appearances of Bond's brother from Langley, it's my brother from Peterborough, it's Mr. Brendan Duffy.
Hello. I'm not from Peterborough, but hello.
For the purposes of this intro, you are.
Fine.
And joining him is a man who disagreed with something that ate him. It's Mr. Tom Wheatley.
Yeah. Very good.
And just like Bond, who often has to rely on his American pal Felix when times get tough, we've drafted in a friend from America to get us out of this shark-infested water. Welcome to the James Bond A to Z podcast, Mr. Alan J. Porter.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, guys. As you can tell, I have a real strong American accent here.
So. You kind of ruined my joke there, but yeah, by being... very as much as English as we are, I think. Alan is the author of James Bond, the history of the Illustrated 007, and co-author with his wife of the recent book, The James Bond Lexicon. And he's also one of the hosts of Honor Majesty's Secret Podcast Network. So thanks for stepping in and joining us for this episode. As someone who has just spent 9 years organizing the world of Bond into alphabetical order, I think it's safe to say you're in good company.
Yeah. So I was delighted. I was going to say, when you guys launched your podcast, I was like, oh, there's some other idiotic geeks out there who put stuff in your alphabetical order as well. So we're not alone in that. So it was nice to see it. And thank you for having me on the show. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, our pleasure. Tell us a little bit about the Lexicon then, because we're big fans of the just the amount of detail that's in there. But it really seems like a real labor of love for you.
Yeah, I've always liked those sort of books. My wife and I think it started with the Dune Encyclopedia, which we discovered when we were both at college. And those encyclopedias of fictional worlds, we've got loads of different ones. And a friend of ours had a publishing company, and he'd done one on the Planet of the Apes. And I was just chatting to him, and I made the stupid comment about, well, how about doing one on James Bond? And he was like, yeah, that'd be cool. I said, oh, I think we can do that in a year. That ended up taking about 6 years over 6 years of actual work over a 10-year period to get it done. So, yeah, there was a lot more there than we ever thought. But it's an encyclopedia of an A to Z of the fictional worlds of Bond. So it's not about the movies. So you won't find entries for like Sean Connery and Roger Moore and George Lazenby in there. But you will find, if you want to know who, you know, James Bond's interior decorator is, or who looks after his Bentley, or, you know, the various brands of cigarettes and champagnes he's smoked or drank, they're all in there. So I think there's 5,000 entries in there. We cover every official, as in licensed, James Bond story from 1953 to the end of 2019. And then anything after that, we put updates on our companion website for anything that was published after December 2019. So it was, as you said, a labor of love, and it's an ongoing project, which is cool because there's new James Bond stuff coming out pretty much all the time.
Do you find that if you're busy and there's a new James Bond film coming out, you think, oh no, we've got to...
Well, yeah, we haven't actually sat down and done the stuff for No Time to Die yet. So that's the next big project. We've done all the recent Dynamite comics. And of course, there's a new Anthony Horowitz novel coming out as well. So we'll be doing that and No Time to Die. So I think next month is when we're going to sit down and try and get No Time to Die done.
I've got quite a nerdy question for you regarding No Time to Die. Because at the start of the book, you list all the different incarnations of James Bond.
Yep.
And you've listed Sean Connery to Daniel Craig as one James Bond. But now with No Time to Die, does that mean we're going to get a new James Bond in the lexicon, or will you just add another name onto the end of that?
No, I actually had Connery to Pierce as one
James Bond.
And then Craig is a separate version of James Bond.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. So, and then obviously whoever comes along next, it'll be interesting to see how they fit it into the so-called movie continuity, and we'll see how that... I like to think of the Daniel Craig Bonds as like a comic book miniseries, if you like. It was a separate continuity, its own separate universe away from all the other ones that came before it. So I treat him as a separate book. We treat him as a separate Bond in the book.
And that was a decision because of Casino Royale?
Partly that, yeah. That was basically a soft reboot, and they were starting with him at the beginning of his career again. Yeah, so it was pretty much driven by that. But the reason we lumped all the others together, because I know in Die Another Day, there was some of the interviews and backstory around that when they were doing that, the producers actually said to Lee Tamahori, the director, it's the same guy. You can't mess around with the fact that this is the same guy that's been there since 1962. Because he had some ideas where he did want to mess around with that. And they were like, no, this is the same guy. So that was like the official word that all the way through to Pierce, it was the same guy. And then obviously they did the reboot with Casino Royale. So that was our thinking. I know not everybody agrees with it. That's the way we saw it.
Yeah, have your rules and stick to them, I think.
Yeah.
Something that really surprised me as well, because obviously we're talking about Felix Leiter on this episode, was just how many different Felixes there had been beyond the films. Because I introduced seven actors that played him, but obviously we've had another one in the movies as well in Never Say Never Again, and then lots of different other versions as well.
Right, and we even had the if you're going back to the TV show in 1954, we had the Clarence Leiter, and then we've had different versions in the novels and comics and so forth. Yeah, it's the same with a lot of those supporting characters. There's so many different versions of Moneypenny. There's so many different versions of M, of Q.
So Alan, you're here to fill us in on the blanks beyond the movies, which is something we don't do very often, but we're glad to have you here to hear more about the different Felix Leiters. But just as a general opening question, like what are your guys' thoughts on Felix as a character in the movies?
Yeah, it's interesting because he is he's played so differently in the movies. I really do like the Jeffrey Wright version where he really became a fully fleshed character, and you know, you felt that connection with him and Bond. The others, some of the time I like the David Hesson one. He's my favourite one. And I really felt there was a connection there between him and Roger Moore and Timothy Dalton. You really felt that they were friends. Other times, they just sort of wander in and out. They're really just exposition machines. They just walk in to sort of set some of the plot up and then leave, and they've got no real role to play. So I think it took them quite a long time to figure out who they wanted Felix Leiter in the movies to actually be, what his role was going to be.
Yeah, I completely agree with the exposition comment. I always find it sometimes a little bit disappointing in some of the films where it kind of pops up and you can just tell that he's not a rounded character. He just comes in there and he's a bit simplistic. But I think the problem with Felix Leiter across the whole of the film series is that you have that sort of fluctuation across it all. So he's such a... you can't really depend on that character. In the latest ones, you can. He becomes a fully fledged character. But... you're talking there as well about sort of the changing characters, Moneypenny and some of the other ones, but none changed so much as Felix Leiter in such different ways as well. Sometimes they go for a completely different approach to how he interacts with Bond. So I think he's a really important character for Bond because it's grown off the back of that. There is this sort of changing character all the way through, and that consistency changes. But yeah, it's I always find it a tricky character to follow. I think if you were not a fan of the Bond films and you watched maybe two or three of them with different Felix characters, you'd never know that they were the same character throughout.
No, I have a feeling it sort of became a bit of an inside joke. I mean, I know originally they wanted Jack Lord to carry on, but he was asking too much money, and then Hawaii Five-O took off and he became, you know, a big star on his own. Yeah. And I think, you know, what was it? There wasn't one in From Russia With Love, so we then got Cecil Linder in Goldfinger, which I don't know, was an odd casting choice to go from Jack Lord to that. And then I think it just became like an internal joke that you know, every time Felix is in, we'll have somebody brand new play it, and it sort of just became a, you know, part of the trope. And as you said, that means that you really can't establish who that character is. So.
Well, we often talk quite a bit about the character consistencies and saying, especially in the early ones, that as the Bond characters change and the storylines change, you need consistencies across the film to when people come and watch it, they go, I know this is a Bond film. I know some things have changed, but I've still got that grounding in M and in Q. And that probably gave them the flexibility to change lighter. But if they had changed M and they had changed Moneypenny, that would have probably been too much. So that's the one point of flexibility they've probably had across the films that meant that the film still worked, but they could have a play around with it.
I'm a big fan of lighter when he's used properly anyway. And I feel he feels like a safety net for Bond. There's an air of comfort whenever lighter's around. You think, oh, Bond actually has an ally, because it's rare that he does. You know, if he does, he has an ally, a short-term ally who usually gets killed off 10 minutes later. So when you've got someone like lighter, you do feel reassured that Bond is not out there completely alone. But it's interesting that he's never given the chance to sort of give himself any depth.
Yeah, I was actually surprised doing, you know, reading back and doing, before we got on the call and doing the quick research, is that he was only actually in 10 films. I thought it was actually, you know, he was in less than half of the movies we've had, and I would have said it was probably 75% just to gut feel. But, you know, you just expect lighter to be there.
They have sort of surrogate lighters, don't they, in some of the films that do the same job.
Yeah. But he is such an established part of the Bond canon, you just sort of expect him to be there. But he's sometimes there. I mean, there's a couple where he's mentioned, but he's not actually physically there. But his presence is greater than the number of appearances, if that makes sense, or at least to me, it seems that way.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, even when you've got Jack Wade, you know, in the Brosnan films, it feels like we say, it's a surrogate Felix Leiter, but if you feel that connection again. You know, you can sense that Leiter is there somewhere within there. You know.
Oh, yeah. Jack Wade is definitely Felix Leiter.
Yeah.
Yeah. For me, Felix Leiter is... I always think of him as the book Felix, because he's much more of an integral part to the stories in the books than he ever is in the films. And I think it's a real shame that we've never had a film that really sort of matches up to my expectations of what we get of Felix in the books. Because he's very colourfully written in the books, and sometimes he's not, the characterisations by some of the actors aren't as memorable. But in fact, very few are as memorable as they could be. So what I would hope in any future incarnations of Bond that they look at Felix Leiter as a real opportunity to expand the world beyond Bond. I know that's something that Eon's been sort of not too keen on, but maybe in the future with the growing horizons at Amazon, they might need to build that character up. And I think we saw a bit of that in with No Time to Die and with Jeffrey Wright, particularly coming back for three films.
Completely. And in the modern day storytelling, the secondary characters, you need them to be rounded characters to round off the main character, which is something that they didn't really tend to do in a lot of those older films. You just had people in there that were, you know, serving a purpose, but now it benefits the main character to have rounded supporting cast as well.
We've definitely moved towards more ensemble type storytelling, I think, in movies and TV these days. It's less about just the solo main star. So I think you're right. Hopefully, with whatever comes next and they build that, if they do bring in Felix Leiter, it's a more consistent rounded character that we get going forward. At least that's my hope.
Yeah.
So Brendan, let's kick things off by talking about who is Felix and what sort of his characteristics in the movies.
So Felix is a highly ranked CIA agent. He comes with a wealth of resources, often relied upon by Bond because he's got that the financial backing of the Americans. Across the board, generally, he's got a good sense of humour. I would say most of them portray that. And he's loyal. He shows a great loyalty to Bond. And like I touched on earlier, having that sort of ally that Bond can rely on is incredibly important. But it really represents the British-American special relationship. That's essentially what it is. It's sort of that in character form, isn't it? But yeah, and each different version, they're basically taken from that core principle that there is a special relationship. And each actor, obviously, will touch on it, how they play it differently.
Yeah, that special relationship is an interesting one because it's one that is quite obvious in the books and some of the earlier films. Not one that you can really do anymore because it doesn't necessarily put America in a good light when you see... Basically, Felix plays the... he's quite similar to Bond in the way that he has similar skill set, he has similar powers at his disposal, but Bond's always the one who can do it better. And Felix Leiter is just sort of like his helper to do it, which probably isn't... In the more modern films, that's not really the case. They're pretty much on a par. And I think, as I was saying, that gives Bond more of a rounded character because Leiter's doing some of the characterization for him. Just by being friends with him and having that relationship, you start building the character of Craig's Bond a lot more, which you didn't get in those early ones. But obviously, Leiter comes from the books originally. He was in six of Fleming's novels, originally from Texas, which I'm guessing is why you're such a big fan, Alan.
It helps, yes. Yeah. By the way, for those who didn't catch, because we were talking about it before we went on air, yes, I live in Texas, so yeah.
Yeah. and so he is, you've talked a little bit about his role, former member of the US Marine Corps, and then he's working for the CIA. Apparently the name comes from Fleming naming it after two of his American friends. Felix was Ivor Bryce's middle name, and then they had a friend, a mutual friend, called Tommy Leiter as well. So that's where the birth of his name comes from. He's often described in the books as sort of a cool character, sort of a no-nonsense guy, gets the job done. But perhaps most importantly, he knows... Bond's strengths and weaknesses. That's why he's so good at helping him, because he knows what he needs when he needs it. And it's something that carries over to the films quite nicely in some of the films, but in the books it goes into a lot more detail with how that relationship is built and the benefits that they have to each other, aside from just being a helper to Bond. And in the books as well, and in the films later on in Casino Royale, Leiter is so important because he basically saves the day. He saves Bond at the Casino Royale by giving him the money that he needs to win the card game, and that really defines that relationship because he's so indebted to him for that, and that carries on across into those following six books. There is a lot of talk around in the books that Leiter is, as we've said, a much more rounded character. He's really developed over the course of those books, and you see him in loads of different scenarios to the point where we actually see him die. We actually see him almost die in the Shark Tank, which is sort of covered in License to Kill, but not in as much depth as in the books, where there is a follow-up book where he then has a hook in his hand and he can't actually shoot anymore, so he has to leave the CIA as a result of that. There's other nice characterization bits in the books as well that go into more detail in Live and Let Die. He's like a jazz musician. He wrote jazz music, and they go into this sort of story behind him. And one of the reasons why he gets let off by Mr. Big in Harlem is that he's a big fan of jazz music, which is something, some sort of depth you never see really go into in the films. Just goes to show you that sort of level that goes in there. So I think overall, I won't go into too much depth about Leiter in the books. I'm getting a bit too excited about it. Overall, I think he's really, in the books, there's a lot of depth to him, and he's a really important character to Bond. We know that Fleming is so good at characterization, so you'd expect that in the books. And it doesn't really relay as well to the films. In the films, they've sort of picked him up, maybe less so in Dr. No. Maybe in Dr. No, they started to get it right, but then over the course of the earlier films, they sort of lost the focus on Leiter. So yeah, he became a little bit less of a main character and more of a sort of additional help.
I like the fact that in the books he pretty much bookends both the series, because as you said, he's there in Casino Royale, helps Bail Bond out in Casino Royale, then he go to the last of the Fleming stories, The Man with the Golden Gun, and it's Leiter who finds the injured Bond at the end of that story and drags him out of the jungle and gets him to a hospital. And it's like, I just love the fact that Leiter's in both the first book and the last book, and he plays such a pivotal role in both. And then, as you said, you've got his story dotted throughout the other ones of him being injured and then coming back, working for the Pinkertons, and then getting pulled back into the CIA and, you know, stuff about his fast cars that Bond's jealous of and the music and all that stuff. So I just like the fact that he booked, you know, like I said, he's at the beginning of the end of the Fleming books, and then you just get these little bits of growth of the character throughout, scattered throughout the other books. So
Completely. And they sort of, they point towards that a bit, especially in No Time to Die, where they start to reference their history of working together. But it's such it's something that really, it misses out in a lot of the Bond films, where Bond doesn't have any friends, doesn't have any links to, you know, people that help him in that context, and especially with possibly Roger as well. Roger doesn't really hardly ever has friends, maybe apart from sort of Tibbet. And I think that makes the character significantly more two-dimensional than in the later ones. I definitely think they've sort of resolved that to a point in the later films and in No Time to Die. Alan, do you want to talk us a little bit about Casino Royale and Michael? Is it Michael Pate?
Michael Pate, yes. You're talking about Casino Royale 1954, which I mentioned earlier, where it's interesting. You were talking about the special relationship. So Casino Royale 1954 was done for American TV. It was a live one-hour drama on CBS Climax series. And this is the one where they flipped the special relationship, where Bond was an American agent and Leiter was a British agent. And they called him Clarence Leiter rather than Felix Leiter. And actually in the credits, they also misspelled his name. In the credits, he's actually Clarence Letter, L-E-T-T-E-R. I really like him and Barry Nelson together as Bond, because they have a really key scene, which is, we were talking about Felix Leiter being an exposition dump. For me, Casino Royale 54 is the zenith. It's how you do exposition and do it in a great way, because you have a scene where the two of them are sat at a table and Bond is explaining the game of Baccarat to Leiter, because Leiter says, I don't know how this game works. So while Bond is explaining the game, Leiter at the same time is actually briefing him on the mission. And the dialogue goes backwards and forwards between the two. And I think it's a really clever scene. It's really brilliantly done. Unfortunately, Leiter is also the one who says, oh, they call you Cardcase Jimmy Bond. And that led to everybody thinking that this is the one where Bond is called Jimmy Bond. And he's not. He's called James Bond. Barry Nelson introduces himself as James Bond. He's in the credits as James Bond. Every other character calls him James Bond. But Leiter says Jimmy Bond, and everybody picks up on what that one and says, oh, that's the one where he's called Jimmy Bond. And it's not, and it drives me nuts, and I'll get off that soapbox. but it's interesting that they did swap that special relationship, that the agent was American and his helper and the guy who set up the mission was actually a British agent. I thought was an interesting way of doing it, because obviously it was being done for an American TV, so the lead character in 1954, so the lead character, the hero, has to be an American agent. I thought it was really well done. If you've never seen Casino Royale 54, I think it's on YouTube and it's on several DVD releases. It's given the constraints they had of doing a live show in 1 hour, I think it was a really good adaptation of Casino Royale. And it's an interesting idea the way that they used Leiter to actually explain both the game, introduce the card game to people, which the movies never did. The movies never explained how Baccarat or Chemin de Fer was played. You just sort of had to pick it up over however many movies. In that one-hour show, they did, and they also delivered the exposition in a really, really clever way, I thought. So, and by the way, Michael Pate playing the British Leiter was actually, in fact, an Australian. So just to confuse it even more. But he was a well-known character actor. I think he'd been in a lot of westerns. He was very familiar to me from a lot of, if you like TV westerns in the 50s and 60s, you'll see him all over the place in those. He usually plays a bad guy. He was sort of a professional bad guy on the TV westerns at the time.
Yeah, it's a version I wasn't very familiar with, to be honest. So before we jump on to Dr. No, there's also the Daily Express comic strips. Do they predate the films?
Yeah, they do. They're around the same time, 54. They started those, and that was the first visual of Bond that anybody got, was really in the Daily Express comic strips, is what Bond would look like. And they started those off by adapting the Fleming novels. So where Felix Leiter is in those six Fleming stories, you get him in the Daily Express strips. And then they started around 69, started with original brand new stories. And it's debatable actually whether one of the Daily Express strips or Colonel Sun was the first official continuation Bond story, because they pretty much came out within a couple of weeks of each other. But I like to think the newspaper strip was the first non-Fleming Bond story. But those strips ran for 25 years, right up until the mid-80s. But I don't think without actually really going back in and digging it, I don't think they used Leiter much beyond the official adaptation. So I don't think he was a recurring character. They tended to do different versions of Spectre and different versions of Q and things like that. But I don't think they brought Leiter in for many more of those stories. But the Fleming adaptations are really good. If you can find those and read those, they're very well done.
Yeah, need to look into those. So the first movie version of Felix Leiter was in 1962's Dr. No, with Jack Lord playing Felix Leiter. I think probably the most memorable thing for a lot of people is his incredible sunglasses that Felix wears in this movie, because they are sensational. Now, interestingly, Felix isn't actually in the book of Dr. No, but he was added in here. And actually, because of that, some people think his input is fairly minimal in this, in terms of the actual story. But I'll just tell you a little bit about Jack Lord first. So he was actually born John Joseph Patrick Ryan in 1920, and his acting career was delayed by World War II. And actually, while he was in World War II, he served in the Merchant Marines, and his boat was sunk by a German torpedo, and he was stranded on a lifeboat for 16 hours, apparently. And he promised to himself he survived, he'd change his name. And after his rescue, this is when he changed his name to Jack Lord. So Jack Lord went on to make his movie debut in 1949. He worked on Broadway in the 1950s and became quite an in-demand TV actor. And according to an interview that I read with him, said he turned down 22 different series before he accepted the lead role in a rodeo show called Stony Burke, in which he played the title role. That's kind of what put him on the map in TV land, but that was actually cancelled after just one season. And after that, he had apparently been linked with the role of Napoleon Solo in The Man from U.N.C.L.E. He also was considered for Elliot Ness in The Untouchables. And legend has it that he was offered the role of Captain Kirk in Star Trek, after the original Captain Kirk, Geoffrey Hunter, in the Star Trek pilot. They didn't want him to return when they got the chance to do a redo on the pilot. Gene Roddenberry wanted Jack Lord, but Lord wanted co-producer status, and that led to Gene Roddenberry changing his mind. So that's something that will recur with Lord, as we will find out in a second. But yeah, in Dr. No, you find that Felix has been sent to Jamaica to investigate the missile toppling signals that are coming from the area, and he had been working with Strangways, who obviously gets killed at the start of the movie, and then he moves on to working with Bond. I guess the thing that most people know Jack Lord for is for playing Steve McGarrett in Hawaii Five-O with the catchphrase "Book 'em, Dano," and that was the Hawaii show which aired for 12 seasons from 1968 to 1980. It's quite a hell of a run, that, really. Sadly, Jack Lord died in 1998, age 77, after suffering with Alzheimer's. But back to Bond, Jack Lord had apparently signed a two-picture deal to play Felix. And as Alan mentioned before, he actually tried to get more money and to be listed as one of the co-stars of Goldfinger. But this was no deal for Cubby and Harry, according to some reports. But Jack Lord actually disputes this version of the story. He says that He did want to come back for Goldfinger, but what they offered him was what he called a no-bread contract, which meant he couldn't act in any other roles except for the James Bond movies for 7 years. He said he couldn't even make a TV commercial or a play, and because the role didn't pay that much, and also there was no guarantee that he would actually come back in future 007 movies, he declined the offer to return as Felix Leiter. So what the truth is behind that, I'm not 100% sure. But there's an interview with Barbara Broccoli where she was interviewed and asked about the situation. She said, if Jack Lord said it, then it's probably true. So she reckons what he says is the truth. And from what we know about, you know, the dealings of Harry and Cubby in the early days, that sounds about right.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. We know how they treated Connery.
Yeah.
You know, so it does sound like it makes sense. Yeah.
That sounds like a no-win contract, just so they don't actually have to say no. They'll just give him a contract that's so bad that they know he'll turn it down.
Definitely. So who did they get for Goldfinger instead?
Goldfinger, which we've covered the whole film in the Goldfinger episode, but they got Cess Linder in. So he makes an immediate impact because he's in the stuff right at the start of the film when they controversially have some man talk that involves Felix Leiter. And then the rest of the film is Felix basically sort of stalking Bond, making sure he's okay, and you know, while he's enjoying a mint julep, thinking he's okay when he's not. So he just gets to sort of hang out, go to Kentucky Fried Chicken, you know. So I guess we find bits about Felix Leiter in this just from the activities that he's doing. But he, as we covered in the main episode, he was the only actor that was actually on location in Miami when they shot this. But yeah, I mean I don't recall he does actually do that much, does he, apart from just sort of watch Bond.
No, he's just helping out, isn't he? But Bond top pops up and says, can you help me do this and this, and he'll solve it. He's not that integral to the plot, but I think he's the point where the lighter figure starts getting... I really like him. I think he's great in it, but it's sort of the point where they've gone, yeah, just, you know, don't worry about the character or anything, just make him fill in the gaps, and that's fine. And it's set the framework from then on for what Leiter's like in later films. But yeah, as I said, I like it though.
Yeah, I agree with you. I always see Slinder as, like, I don't know, Bond's dad, or he's just keeping a watching eye on him. I mean he's clearly a lot older, or seems to be older, and you know, he's just making sure his friend, or you know, the young kid he's looking at, and the guy he's looking after, is, you know, keeping a watchful eye on him but not getting in the way. So I always think of him as the dad Felix Leiter.
Yeah,
it's true. It's almost like it's like the womanizing side of it, where he's just like, oh yeah, yes, I know what you're like, James, go on, be careful.
Yeah, he doesn't even know which girl he's talking about and things like that. Yeah.
So. Well, in terms of his age, he was only actually 42.
Was he? Okay. Wow.
But he does look... he looks a lot older. Yeah. In terms of his career, he was in over 225 different films and TV shows. As a lot of these sort of actors, these that have smaller roles, he's done the rounds. You know, he's been on Alfred Hitchcock, Ironside, The Saint, Danger Bay, New Avengers. The other main role that people might know him from is Lolita in 1962 as Dr. Keiji. But yeah, sadly he died in 1992, age 71. But Bond fans will definitely remember his Felix, I think. It helps being in Goldfinger as well, doesn't it?
Definitely. And he got lucky. Yeah.
And to be the first real character on screen in Goldfinger too. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
He's definitely the one I always think of when I think of Leiter. He's probably my go-to. Not just, I'm obsessed with Goldfinger, but yeah, he's sort of my go-to one. Not necessarily my favourite, but the one that I think of as Leiter.
Hanging around.
So then we move on.
Hanging around outside KFC.
And apparently that KFC is still there, actually. Do you know that KFC was not actually in Kentucky, it was in Miami?
Is that right? Mm. That was helpful for when they were pretending to be in Kentucky.
Yeah. Apparently they filmed it because it had the word Kentucky and they didn't know it was a chain.
Oh, wow.
They thought they filmed it for some local colour. They didn't actually realise it was like a fast food chain.
So on from Goldfinger, probably one of the least disputed Bond films, to Thunderball and Rick Van Nutter, who took on the third role of Leiter in the Bond film series. So much like the film Thunderball, Rick Van Nutter's role as Leiter is also a little bit of a divisive one. It tends to be one where people either really like him or and think he wasn't quite right for the role. He plays a sort of, he's more orchestral in the plans that happen in Thunderball. He's not really just a backseat. He has a little bit more of an sort of overt character to him. Into a point where some people say he's a bit of a goofball in it, which doesn't fit with the lighters that we're used to from the films and possibly the book as well. You went into depth there about Jack Lord Butler. There's not really that much to the career of Rick Van Nutter. He was picked up to take on a role, not really because of his own career, but more because he was married to Swedish actress Anita Ekberg, who was a massive actor at the time. She was in things like, was it the Dolce Vita? But loads of other stuff, like massive films at the time. Yeah, he was married to her, and they had dinner with Cubby and Dana Broccoli after Ekberg had appeared in Call Me Buana. So this has sort of kicked off the relationship, and he was offered the role of Felix Leiter without an audition, although he did apparently do some screen tests with Bond girls. So yeah, he had a more proactive role in Thunderball, and yeah, some people think he was an inspired choice. They think he was a lot more engaged with Sean in that film. But although he was good casting, though, the script was apparently, or a lot of people said that the script didn't really give him the opportunity to use those skills and develop that character enough in that one. I think he's fine. I completely agree with the goofball thing. I always see him as a bit of a goofball. He just doesn't seem to have any sort of chemistry with Sean for me. He seems like Sean doesn't quite understand him or doesn't quite get the character. But he does do a lot more. Like, he actually is quite involved in that plot. There's various points in it where his lighter actually saves Bond from a scenario. And later on, he's the guy that calls in the army, I think it is, or the navy, to come and have the big water fight at the end. So he does play a much larger role, but he's a very different lighter than in the first two iterations we've seen. What do you think to Rick Van Nutter?
I like the fact you actually get to see this lighter do stuff like flying a helicopter and shooting
guns. Yes, yeah, the helicopter's a big one. Yeah,
and you know, helping that stuff out and actually, you know, understanding the math of how far the Disco Volante could and couldn't have sailed and stuff. So you actually see him. Yeah. I like him. I think he's closer to the physical description of Leiter in the books than probably any of the other ones.
Yeah.
You know, he looks like a Texan, even though he's from California. But you know, I like him in the role. I didn't know about the Anita Ekberg connection. That's interesting because she's the Call Me Buana is the poster that you see on the wall in From
of
Russia
course,
with
yes, yeah.
From Russia with Love. So it's her mouth that Kirilenko.
It's all fitting together.
Yeah. So she was part of the Eon Productions family because that was an Eon movie. So okay, that makes a lot of sense. I did not know about that. It was interesting.
Well, if you look at the films that I don't know a lot about Rick, or didn't know much about him until researching for this, and he's only done about 15 films, and none of them are films that have really made a lot of headway in the world. Definitely not stood the test of time. So yeah, that's definitely seems like that was the driving force behind him getting the role in comparison to some of the other ones.
Yeah, it seemed like he, from the quick research I did, he did a lot in Italy. He was like the Italian version of Ivanhoe, and he did a couple of spaghetti westerns and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just what something you mentioned there, Alan, about the physical description of Felix. So it's probably in the books, he's blonde-haired, like sandy-haired. And what else do we know about him physically in the books? Do you know?
He's just sort of, he's tall, you know, he's taller, he's got, you know, before he gets eaten, but he sort of, you know, is a bit more of an athletic build and he's more into that sort of stuff. So, and he's around Bond's age, which, you know, Rick Van Nutter and Connery were. Despite me not knowing how old Cees Linder was, that you know they seem closer in age. They seem more contemporaries.
Yeah.
So
he's a bit of an actual counterpart to Bond, an American version of Bond.
Yeah.
Whereas in a lot of the iterations versions we see in the films, he's definitely not like an American. He's more like a desk detective, isn't he?
Yeah.
Just definitely doesn't look like, you know, especially in the case of maybe Linder. He's not at the peak of physical perfection like Bond is.
Yeah. On
the timeline, we've got the Semic comics, Alan. What are those?
Okay, so once they started to get, after Anne Fleming passed away and the sort of world of doing continuations and stuff for Bond opened up because she didn't have to approve it anymore, we started getting the new novels like the John Gardner ones and so forth. And in Sweden, the people who translated reprints of the newspaper strips started to create their own new original James Bond stories that were just published in Swedish to start with, and then in other languages around Europe. And several of those have brought back Felix Leiter as Bond's sort of sidekick counterpart. And there's some really good fun stories there. Actually, one of my favorite ones has Bond and Felix Leiter trying to track down the arch villain by going to a real estate agent who specializes in layers for supervillains. And basically finding out which, you know, volcano or cave or whatever that the supervillain they're after rented recently. And that was sort of Leiter's idea, is let's go and find out, you know, what hideout this guy's rented recently. So I just love the way they use Leiter in those. Again, he's Bond's counterpart, but he also comes up with some interesting ideas, and they using him in some of those stories. If you're interested in some of those stories, if you go to the Comics Royale website, the guy who runs that, who's also a Bond guy in Texas, is systematically working through and translating those Swedish stories back into English, or into English for the on the Comics Royale website. So if you're interested in any, seeing what those Swedish original James Bond stories look like, they about once a month a new one gets translated and posted on comicsroyale.com. So I highly recommend that. There are fun new Bond stories to go discover.
Oh, we'll definitely have to check those out. On to the next incarnation of Felix Leiter, and I would say probably one of the least successful, is Norman Burton as Felix in Diamonds Are Forever. He was the fourth actor to play the character, and obviously this is the one where you see Felix posing as a customs official to meet Bond when he arrives in LA with the body of Peter Franks, and they have the back and forth, which has the elementary Dr. Leiter line in it. And then you also see that Leiter has been investigating the diamond smuggling ring in Vegas. And also he helps with freeing Willard White from the house later on. And then he also pops up again at the end with the raid on the oil rig base. But he's quite an unlikely Felix Leiter, I think. He seems a lot older than Bond, less of a contemporary than we just had with Rick Van Nutter. He's also a bit, he's probably, I don't know, polite way of saying it, he's less suave, he's a bit more coarse, he's a bit more comical.
He's a bit J.W. Pepper.
Yeah, he's a bit of a stranger on this one.
Yeah, he's definitely, for me, I actually just had to type his name in because I completely forgotten what he looked like then. Yeah, he's definitely one of the most forgettable. I don't know if that's the film, but also, yeah, I don't think he is an inspired casting for Connery at that point.
He's a very passive version of Felix Leiter. He actually doesn't... He's there, but he's not actually really contributing much. You know, he may be ordering guys around to watch the door or, you know, but he's on the radio with people, or he turns up after things. Like you mentioned the escape of Willard White, you know, the rescue of Willard White. He turns up afterwards. You know, after Bond's done all the work, you know, he's in the helicopter directing the fight at the oil rig, but he never gets involved. I don't know. He seems very passive.
I suppose the difference, isn't it, with he's in that film, he is just a CIA agent that's helping Bond, and he's not meant to be just a CIA agent helping Bond. Mm-hmm. He's meant to be his friend, and he's helping him, but he's in the CIA.
Yeah.
And that's that distinction. In the films that it really works, it just seems like the CIA thing is an addition to it because they've got the resources behind them, but they want to help Bond anyway.
Right. I mean, it could have been any CIA agent or any local field agent.
Yeah.
I guess that's the point, isn't it? Yeah. So the actor, Norman Burton, he was born in 1923 in New York. He actually studied at the famed Actors Studio, studying under Lee Strasberg, learning about method acting. And he had a decent career. He worked for 3 decades. He did more than 40 movies and 23 TV roles. Some of the things on his CV include Towering Inferno and Planet of the Apes. And then on TV, again, done the circuit, has appeared in Murder, She Wrote, I Dream of Jeannie, Kojak, those sorts of things. So talking in his bedside companion, Raymond Benson, talking about this version of Felix Leiter, he said that he considered Burton to be overweight and too old for the role. Harsh, but probably quite accurate. And the actor who played him, he died in 2003 in a car accident. He was 79. So on to Alan's favourite Felix Leiter. And probably mine, yes. I think.
Yeah, probably mine as well, to be honest. Yeah.
I mean, Tom said that Cees Linder is who he thinks about when he visualizes when the name Felix Leiter comes up. For me, it's David Hedison all the way. So.
Yeah. So yeah. The first Felix Leiter that was played twice by the same actor. So he starred in Live and Let Die first off. So this Felix Leiter, again, playing, although it's the same actor, it's slightly different Felix Leiters. So in this one, he's sort of behind the scenes. He's tracking Kananga. And he's also there when Sheriff Pepper isn't happy with what Bond's done, and he sort of smooths things over. Now, the interesting thing about us doing the A to Z is that because we've just done License to Kill and Live and Let Die, and now we're doing Leiter, we have covered David Hedison quite a bit. So do go back and have a listen to those as well.
Some might say too much, Brendan.
And so at the end of the film, he is integral to the role of destroying Kananga's poppy field. And Hedison actually says about how he got this. And I don't know if we spoke about how he got the role. I can't remember. We've spoke about it so much. We probably have, but I'm going to say it again. So he said, I was having dinner with the screenwriter, Tom Mankiewicz, and he asked if I was interested in playing Felix Leiter in Live and Let Die. I read the script and thought it would be great fun to work on a James Bond film with Sean Connery, who was supposed to do it. Next thing I knew, Sean stepped out and Roger Moore stepped in. I couldn't have been happier since Roger and I were good friends. So, 16 years later, he appears in License to Kill. And this time he is working for the DEA, and they are on the trail of Frank Sanchez, who is a drug lord. It's a darker, as we've covered, it's much darker, and also, unfortunately, Leiter's experience is also darker in this one, because Sanchez is captured, but he escapes, and then he actually kidnaps Felix Leiter on his wedding night, takes him to his shark tank, and where Leiter gets fed to sharks. This actually is like the catalyst for the whole film, really. Bond goes on a revenge mission purely because of what's happened. Felix Leiter just got married, but his wife has been killed. He's seriously maimed. So Bond goes out for revenge. David Hedison said there was much more to do in this film than in the past, and they were afraid of using an unknown or someone they weren't quite sure of. I think in this kind of film, it won't lead to other work unless you do something standout with a really wonderfully written scene. Otherwise, you're just doing a job, part of an ensemble. So interesting that we talked about ensemble, where here is David Hedison. He sees the importance of that, you know, back in 1989. But he does say Felix is a fairly one-dimensional character. You can never get into any depth. You do what you can, but there's not much to play. All you can do is perform with a simple reality. It was running around, bang, bang, getting wet, screaming and yelling and all kinds of fun, but not serious acting. But yeah, I mean, I'm a fan of both of them, to be fair, both of his incarnations.
Yeah, he's great. I always think that the Roger Moore link up always reminds me a bit of like a Persuaders vibe in it, because they sort of play off each other, and they are quite similar in certain ways. He's the British equivalent of him, and they do seem like they're on the same level as well, which is quite nice, which they don't normally get quite right. So I think it does work really well in that film. He's definitely one of the best ones for me. When it comes to License to Kill, I think because the character is with Timothy Dalton, it doesn't quite work as well, and they lean far too into the sort of personal relationships between the two, which is sort of copying the book. It's following what they did in the books, where they had that close relationship, but it's almost like the audience isn't quite ready for it, because you've never had that before in any film. So I think this is probably the best example of a relationship that works really well in the context of the films. They must have had a in the back of their heads thinking, well, Roger was really good in Persuaders, this might work really well, and I think it paid off.
Yeah, I find it interesting that really it's actually both movies together is Felix Leiter's story from the book Live and Let Die, because the maiming is in Live and Let Die. So if you're going to do the maiming of Felix Leiter, having it be the same Felix Leiter that was in Live and Let Die makes sense, because it's a continuation of his story in many ways. And yeah, he and Roger work together. There's several things, but there's an episode of The Saint where David Hedison is the guest star in it. And the storyline, I think, has David Hedison and whoever's playing his wife, anyway, they're in some hotel in Europe, and Simon Templar's trying to help them solve the problem. And the lady behind the counter thinks that Simon Templar is James Bond. And there's a great exchange with, are you really? And he's like, he doesn't confirm or deny it. And there's an interesting exchange with David Heavison's character. And when you think about that in terms of where the two of them eventually ended up working on the Bond movies together, it's sort of a neat little foreshadowing of that relationship. So yeah, clearly they knew each other and got on really well. And I think that shows in the movie. For me, one of the things I really love is David Hellison's one-sided telephone conversation, where he's actually Mr. Bell from the flying school is complaining.
Yes,
yes,
Clearly there would not be an actor on the other side of other end of the phone. David Hellison's just doing a one-sided phone conversation about, you know, I'm sure you're a veteran too, and all that sort of stuff. And yeah, I think that's I love that. While Roger's messing around with the ties and trying to distract him in the background, I love that scene between the two of them. I think it really shows the friendship. And I think again he's great in License to Kill. The the I'll see you in hell Sanchez line, the way he delivers it is just brilliant. And as you said, it sort of provides the reason for Bond to go out and get revenge, and you can believe that relationship is there just from those opening few scenes. I think I'll stop going on about David Hedison. I can go on about David Hedison's favourite slides probably for the rest of the podcast.
he died only a few years ago as well, didn't he, sadly?
Yes, he did.
Yeah, I think he'll be remembered long by Bond fans. So, Alan, up next we've got the Gardner novels. Felix Leiter appears in those.
Yeah, he's only in a couple of the John Gardner ones, but interestingly, in that, his daughter, Cedar Leiter, is pretty central to a lot of the John Gardner novels, and she actually has an ongoing relationship with Bond through several of the novels. And she's a sleeper CIA agent, but Felix Leiter doesn't know his daughter is actually connected to the CIA at all, and that she's a sleeper agent. So I thought that was an interesting twist that John Gardner put in there, in sort of bringing the character up to date and putting bringing in his daughter.
All right, then back to another film Leiter, but not one that's probably classed as one of the real Leiters. Never Say Never Again. And this starred Bernie Casey as Felix Leiter. Now, I never really knew much about Bernie Casey. In fact, I've definitely he's the sort of actor that he has appeared in quite a lot of stuff, but it tends to be sort of secondary roles. And when you look at them in a list, you go, "Oh yes, I remember him in that. I remember him in that," because he does have quite noticeable roles in those films. And that's things like Another 48 Hours, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. I think he's the teacher in that. Under Siege, Revenge of the Nerds 3. I can't remember that one too well. I'm Gonna Get You, Sucker. I remember watching that when I was younger. He was a really big American football player at the time. I don't know anything about American football, so I'm not going to go into too much depth about this. But he played for the San Francisco 49ers as well as the LA Rams. But as he got a bit older, he decided that he was getting too old to play sport, and he decided to move into acting and... yeah, started appearing in films and did very well. He did a master's in fine arts, so he had quite a good education for moving into the world of culture and arts and acting. He's not really in Never Say Never Again that much, actually. He's not a massive character. He has a couple of scenes when Bond comes into gets over to America, and he doesn't play it particularly excitingly. I think he's fine in it, but. It's not a very memorable role. He doesn't really do a lot with Connery in it. But according to some people, some people really liked him. They've said that he's a really compelling Felix Leiter. In fact, Smith and Lavington, who wrote a book called Bond Films, said he was the most compelling Felix Leiter since Jack Lord. Although they said that the script was the thing that didn't work so well for him. So yeah. Oh yeah. And also when he was taking on the role in Never Say Never Again, Connery apparently spoke to him and said to try and get him to do it, that in the Leiter role, he was using a black Leiter might make him more memorable. So because it was the first time that he used a black actor in this role, it would be a role that really defined him and would be a good reason for him to do it. And as we know, he did do it. But aside from that, I don't really have a great deal about Bernie Casey. He's surprisingly little information on him. In the world of Bond, I'll try to find some interviews and stuff. But do you guys remember him in Never Say Never Again?
Yes, I think he's terrific in this actually, and I like the scene where they where they're running in their, what is it, the tennis outfits? They're all pretending to do tennis training. But yeah, I think I remember him most from Bill and Ted, actually, now you've mentioned that. I think he is their teacher. Interesting that Sean Connery said that to make the character memorable. So it feels like Connery was aware of the shortcomings of the different actors who'd played him previously. And I know Connery had a lot of complaints about the levels of casting around him. And that's why on Never Say Never Again, he really pushed to have the best actors in the roles around him. So you get a sense that he'd probably been disappointed with some of the actors he'd worked with. And when you think back to the last time...
He said that the lighter role was never remembered by audiences, which is a bit sad.
And the last one he'd worked with was Norman Burton in Diamonds Are Forever. So you can see why he... Yeah. I mean, it's interesting that actually he really cared enough, really.
Mm-hmm. Well, he never got to work with Edison, did he?
No, that's true. That's true. It would have been different.
He changed his tune.
Yeah, and I quite liked Bernie Casey and Never Say Never Again.
Yeah, I thought he was good. I like the fact that, you know, he was there to sort of greet Bond and had, you know, all this, you know, Bond's house ready and the motorcycle ready and, you know, the liaison and stuff. And I like the scene, you know, after the explosion when they're basically, as you said, you know, Connery's on the bicycle and he's sort of doing the lighters running after him as if they're out training to make themselves you know, blend into the crowd around them and get away from the action. I thought that was good. So yeah, I thought he was good. One of the more memorable ones, definitely. For what little he had to work with, I think he did very well with it.
So on from someone who had very little to work with to someone who had even less to work with, and that's John Terry in The Living Daylights. And when Brendan and I were talking, when we did, was it License to Kill? We were talking about, whether or not there'd been another Felix between the two that David Hedison had done. And it was only through a Google search that we realised, Felix is in Living Daylights as well. So played by John Terry, he was actually born in Florida in 1950 and became an actor in 1980 when he moved to New York. But he plays a very fleeting part in Living Daylights. He helps rescue Bond from the police in Tangiers. And then it turns out they've both been working on the same case involving Brad Whittaker. John Terry, actually, his debut role was the title character in this film, Hawk the Slayer, which he starred with Jack Palance. I also looked into Hawk the Slayer, also apparently starred Bernard Breslau as a giant and Roy Kinnear, father of future Tanner, Rory Kinnear.
Have you not seen this?
No, I haven't seen it.
This is like geek royalty movies. Yeah. This is, it's a classic.
And he also starred in a few other films. The only one that caught my eye was Wild Geese 2, which also starred Barbara Carrera. But in 1987, as well as appearing in Living Daylights, he also starred in Full Metal Jacket as well. And after Living Daylights, he had a lot of success in TV and probably most famous now for playing Jack Shepard's dad in Lost.
Yeah, that's how I remember him.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he was in 24 as well.
Yeah, he was also in 24 and in ER in the early episodes and also in a programme called Las Vegas. And apparently he was in David Fincher's Zodiac, but I don't remember him. But like I said, I don't really remember him that much in The Living Daylights either. It's such a fleeting appearance.
He makes a phone call, doesn't he?
Yeah, and he wears a blue jacket.
He's got a cool blue jacket. That's the best bit of it.
Yeah. He's the forgettable one, you're right. I mean, I really, really try and stretch to remember that he was even in that movie.
So, back to the novels, and we've got the Raymond Benson novels.
So I don't know if you know, Raymond Benson is actually from Texas. We're all from Texas, really. So Raymond's from Texas. And so he liked the fact that Felix Leiter was a Texan. So he wrote him into the novels. And I will say that sort of got me my first Bond writing gig because I actually did a piece for Austin Monthly on Bond's connection to Austin and Texas through Felix Leiter, because there's a Tex-Mex, I'm going off the piece here, but there's a Tex-Mex. There's a Tex-Mex chain in Austin called Chewy's. And on the wall, they actually have a plaque that says James Bond ate here. Because in Raymond Benson's novel Facts of Death, he actually does go to Austin on a case and teams up with Leiter, and Leiter takes him to Chewy's. But in that, Felix Leiter is retired. He's retired back to Austin. He's actually in a wheelchair, but of course it's a gadget-laden wheelchair. He has guns hidden in it and nightsticks, and it's motorized. And the two of them take down a bunch of criminals who are shipping bioweapons out from a farm just outside of Austin, Texas, and Leiter's right in the middle of the action. So that's a good one. It's called Facts of Death, that one. And Redmond Benson basically brought Leiter back into the Bond world as a retired agent who was now a freelance security consultant with a kick-ass wheelchair and some fun gadgets. It's one of my favorite Benson novels. It's probably one of my top two Raymond Benson novels, not just because it's set in Austin. It's a really good story, but I highly recommend it. If you want to find out what happened to Felix Leiter after he retired, that's the story to read.
And how was Chewie's?
Chewie's is good, but it's not my favorite Tex-Mex.
Right.
Now, after all the publicity I just gave them, they should at least cut me a meal. I think.
And then we've got the Dark Horse comics as well. Alan, what can you tell us about those?
So Dark Horse Comics, there was several different series from Dark Horse. They had the license for a bit in the sort of around the start of the Timothy Dalton era. And there was a couple of series that Leiter appeared in. I think he was in the Permission to Die, which is a three-issue series done by Mike Grell. It was a really interesting one. The fun thing about that story, he really brings together a lot of the stuff from the movies and the novels. Somehow he got away with actually mixing the two franchises together in the comic. And the other thing is the Berlin Wall fell in the middle of that story being published. And the story was about them actually bringing somebody from East Germany into the West. So it sort of dated very quickly between the second and third issues being published. But it's a good classic Bond story. It's one I actually recommend if you've never read a Bond comic. That's actually probably the one I'd go look for, is Permission to Die, because the guy who wrote and drew it, Mike Grell, is a huge Bond fan and he knows his Bond stuff really well. And then Felix Leiter also pops up in another series called The Quasimodo Gambit, which is not quite so good, but it's still a fun read. So those are the two Dark Horse comics original stories that you'll find Felix Leiter in, is Permission to Die and then The Quasimodo Gambit.
So then to end with the most famous now of all the Leiters, just purely because he's done it more than twice, it's Jeffrey Wright, Brendan.
Yeah, so after having no Leiter on screen for 17 years, the soft reboot of Casino Royale brings in a new Felix Leiter, Jeffrey Wright. It's revealed, because we don't know it's Felix Leiter until he reveals himself on the stairs, I think, isn't it? But up until then, you're like, who is this guy? Because he's just sat there playing poker, the game, with Le Chiffre and Bond. So obviously Bond loses all the cash and is desperate, and he needs to lean on that financial support of the US, and Leiter is at hand to help him out. And then in the following film, Quantum of Solace, he gets a bit of a bigger role. And they're after a corrupt CIA agent, Greg Beam, and Felix Leiter basically warns Bond of the danger after he goes rogue, and telling him where he can find Dominic Green as well. And then at the end of the film, M actually tells Bond that Leiter has been promoted into Greg Beam's old position. Now, we've talked about Quantum of Solace before in terms of the rewrites, the number of rewrites it went through, and it was being rewritten whilst they were shooting as well, but Felix Leiter actually had a larger role in the early rewrites, but it was restricted and chopped down as they went on, unfortunately. And then he gets a mention in Spectre. Mm-hmm. I think it's just a mention though. He's not on screen until No Time to Die. Now I'm gonna put a spoiler warning here, because I think I'm going to be the first person on our podcast to actually say what I'm going to say. So spoiler warning, if you've not seen No Time to Die, don't continue listening. So Bond is retired. He's out of MI6. And it's not until he's dragged back by Felix Leiter and Logan Ash. They track Bond down and they drag Bond out of retirement. There's a great scene in Havana. That, again, back to ensemble, that's a really great scene. CIA agent Logan Ash is a double agent and turns on Leiter and Bond, and Felix Leiter actually drowns. So there's the first spoiler. And it's quite a poignant moment, actually, because I think they've built up... no, because I'm going to mention that they also killed Bond. There you go.
Right. Just in case.
I love the way you just casually threw that in there, you know, just as an aside.
No, it's because there's I've got a quote as well. It's going to reference that.
He'll ruin the ending of Lost next.
Yeah, it's poignant. They've built up to that moment. You know, they've built up quite a relationship purely because Jeffrey Wright has played it for the most on screen that anyone's played it. But Jeffrey Wright says, oh, and especially the quote that James Bond says to Logan Ash when he kicks the car and crushes him. I had a brother. His name was Felix Leiter. Again, adding more weight to that relationship, that it's a bit deeper than a friendship. So Jeffrey Wright, before the film came out, was asked what this would bring. And he said, well, I think it's known that Felix pulls James back into the game and away we go from there. And he says it gives more weight to his return because he hadn't been in the previous two films, because it's like a big deal, him coming back to get Bond out of retirement. And then in terms of after the release, he said, well, Daniel I had a nice run. And if he's going to go out, we, in a sense, should go out together. So I like the way that we rounded it out. And what we did was celebrate the bond, for a lack of better word, between the two characters in a way that was appropriate. So, yeah, that's the lighter that most people listening are going to be aware of, I would say. Mm-hmm. I think Jeffrey Wright's a very good lighter.
He's great. He's great, yeah. He works perfectly for Daniel Craig.
Yeah.
He's just... He's around the same age. Obviously, Craig's a little bit fitter than him, but you can see they're both, you know, they're action guys. They get in there and they do it. I always think it's funny with the rounding off in No Time to Die of Felix Leiter, because it feels like he's been in it all the time, but he hasn't. You've really been in it in Casino Royale and a bit in Quantum. Mm-hmm. So it's probably more poignant than it should be, because he's not really been in the last two.
Yeah.
But that's a testament to how they played that out. But I think he's fantastic in it.
Yeah, I agree with you. It really did feel like he'd been in all five movies and he hadn't. I was actually shocked when you said it was 17 years gap with no lighter. I actually realized when you said it, and I did the math. Yeah, it is, but I'd never really thought of it in those terms. That was a long gap for that character not to be around. As we said, because it feels like he's in a lot more movies than he actually is. And like you said, with the Craig ones, it feels like he's a constant through line in all five, and he's definitely not. And
well, as you say about the books, he bookends it, doesn't he?
He does.
He's really need him for the start and finish. Yeah.
And I thought his death scene was really well played. There's some great behind the scenes specials on the official podcast. They talked about doing the sound effects for that. And now the two guys did that scene over and over again in all that water and stuff to get, and how they were pacing the dialogue so the bubbles didn't overlap the dialogue and the dialogue didn't overlap the sound effects they were going for, and the work that those two guys put into that scene was just immense, and it really shows.
I think he's the right lighter for Daniel Craig's Bond, isn't he? They're both quite dry sense of humor. They're not over excited actors on screen. They sort of very measured, and I think that sort of comes across really well and adds to that sense, that depth of how you feel that relationship has gone much beyond what we've ever seen from a Felix Leiter before. And they even talk about Felix's family in that scene in No Time to Die while they're in the bar. And that's something that, you know, just adds that sort of extra level. They're not just spies.
They're like grizzled old war dogs, aren't they?
Yeah.
They've both been through the ringer loads so many times that you kind of, that rapport works really well. I was thinking with the way that the old Felix lighters work, where they changed, even with the same Bond, they changed the lighters, it just wouldn't have worked in the Craig era, would it? It would have been so weird to do that. Mm. But that relationship between the two is fantastic, and it does tie it off nicely at the end, that you just think, oh, they're so tired, but they're both tired because they've been through it together.
Right. Yeah,
it'd be interesting to see actually how much screen time Jeffrey Wright has, because I'm sure it's really short, yet it's still built up enough of emotional impact for us when he did die at the end.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it's like hardly any time at all. I'm sure it's only a few minutes, and it's a real testament to the two of them that they could really sell that relationship with such limited amount of dialogue and screen time together.
It feels earned, I think, doesn't it, rather than being something that you don't feel anything for. It does feel earned in that moment.
I think it also does lend itself nicely to the fact that Jeffrey Wright plays very similar characters in a lot of films. So he's already built that up. You kind of like, you associate his other films with all the effort that he's put into his career, and you think, God, he has done a lot. Yeah. Just say like with the Batman film and stuff like that, he's a very old grizzled sort of veteran. And you can just, he just always looks tired as well.
I think the other thing that's impressive is you believe the off-screen relationship. Like, there's a belief that these two have gone on missions before.
Yeah. Yes. That's key. That's a key point.
I was just going to say, the reason we didn't have a Felix Leiter for so long was, this is something we talked about on GoldenEye, is that they felt that the continuity of having Felix Leiter in GoldenEye and having been physically able after he'd been eaten in License to Kill was a stretch too far for audiences. That's why they introduced Jack Wade at that point as the surrogate for Felix Leiter. And that's why he wasn't in those films, which is a shame because it would have added a through line if they'd brought Hedison back. I mean, that would have been something quite special.
Why not have him wear a prosthetic? I mean, that would have sent a, you know, because he does in the books. So
yeah. Maybe they just wanted to set it apart, his era, the Brosnan era from the Dalton. But an interesting what if, I think.
Just going back to the Daniel Craig, Jeffrey Wright thing. We started off this talking about the special relationship, you know, that really Leiter was the indication of the special relationship between the two governments. What I liked about No Time to Die and at the end of it, it's the relationship between those two characters. The relationship between the governments has fallen down, and it's actually the relationship between those two as individuals that brings the governments back together to stop the threat. So I like the fact that, you know, it starts off with the Jack Lord one. It's like, I'm just a CIA guy on a mission, and by the time we get here, it doesn't matter what the governments are thinking or doing. It's about the two of them as individuals, and I really like that through line. Yeah. Whether it was deliberate or not, I think it's really cool.
So that's the Felix Leiters in the movies. What other Felixes should we be aware of, Alan, in the world of Bond?
Okay, so what do we not talk about? So we haven't talked about Dynamite Comics, have we?
No.
Okay. Dynamite Comics is the current publisher of the James Bond comics, has been pretty much through all the Craig era. They do some really good stuff. What I like about them is Felix Leiter is very much a major character in that series. We just talked about actually having prosthetics. He has a cybernetic arm and prosthetics in that, which actually is used as a plot device because he can like put breathers in it and go underwater and have breathers in his arm and electronics and stuff like that. There's a whole story right up front about how he gets the cybernetic arm that makes a lot of sense within that continuity. And he and Bond are best buddies. He pops up throughout a lot of the stories, providing support for Bond, not just in the field, but emotional support. There's a great story, graphic novel called Reflections of Death, which basically is the two of them in a pub reminiscing over this whole sequence of events that they've just been through. So, and there's also a Felix Leiter focused miniseries, 4-issue miniseries of Felix Leiter teaming up with Taiga Tanaka to take down bioterrorists in Japan, which is brilliant. And I think would make an awesome Netflix series. I would love to. If there's any spin-off, I want to see a Felix Leiter, Taiga Tanaka buddy movie series on Netflix based on that story, because it's really cool. So in one of the recent stories, Bond basically shoots Felix Leiter in the head to prove that he's defected to Spectre. And, you know, Leiter sort of goes along with it because he knows Bond's a good enough shot that he'll like crease his skull but not blow his head off, type stuff. So the two of them are really, really close. He's a really great character, really well written. So I'm on record. I'm not a huge fan of the Daniel Craig movies. I actually think the best Bond stuff that's been done over the last several years has been the Dynamite comics. For me, that's the best contemporary Bond. And Felix Leiter is front and center of those stories. If he's not actually right in the middle of the story, he is definitely a very strong supporting character, probably more so than M or Moneypenny or Q. He really is Bond's sort of, I was going to make a bad joke, he really is Bond's right arm, but it's a prosthetic one. It's a cybernetic one. Highly recommend them. The character of Felix Leiter knows he's really good, as you can probably tell, because I keep going on about it. So if you haven't read them,
that's definitely on the list.
Go read it. And if you don't want to read the rest of them, just check out the Felix Leiter miniseries. I think it's collected as a hardcover and softcover versions, or I think you can get it digitally on Comixology. Sorry, it's not Comixology anymore, is it? It's part of Amazon. So you can get it if you're on Amazon Kindle. You can get it on there.
And then we've got a couple of others that you noted down, Carte Blanche and Solo.
Oh, right, yeah. We mentioned the John Gardner ones. You have Felix's Daughter and the William Boyd's novel Solo. You have Felix's nephew is the CIA agent, Brigham right. Leiter. And then, of course, we cannot forget James Bond Jr.
never forget James Bond Jr.
Which features Gordo Leiter, Felix's son, who is Bond's best friend at and resident jock at Warfield Academy, of course. So
certainly the best version of Leiter, I imagine.
Probably, yes.
Wow, what that odyssey we've been on with Felix Leiter. Who knew there was so much to know about just one character? Yeah, thanks for coming on, Alan, and broadening our horizons in terms of Bond. We've tended to stick to the movies on the podcast just to keep our lives simpler, but sounds like you've
I should have done that 6 years ago.
Yeah. Seems like you've done all the hard work for everyone else. And yeah, we thank you for it, definitely. So if people want to get hold of the lexicon, how do they get hold of it?
It's on the aforementioned Amazon. It's on all the Amazon World websites. And it's also on a lot of independent online bookstores. If you actually go to our companion website, jamesbondlexicon.online, and check out the books page, it gives you a link to all the places that we know it is available online if you don't want to use Amazon. Otherwise, you can get it from your local Amazon global site.
Cool. And all this stuff about Felix Leiter is in there. It's amazing the amount of detail you've got in that book. It's it really is incredible. Brendan, do you want to ask the ultimate question?
Well, it's slightly tweaked, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, why don't we ask both of them?
Because okay. So I'll ask the question then.
Yeah.
Okay.
The groaning question.
The groaning question. Who do you think should play the next James Bond?
So I actually have two in mind, depending on which way they go. So if they want to go for something that's a bit more, not quite Daniel Craig level seriousness, but a bit of a more serious Bond, Aidan Turner is probably my lead choice.
Very good.
If they want to go for a bit more of a light-hearted Bond, Mark Rowley, who plays Finian on The Last Kingdom.
Ah,
so if you watch The Last Kingdom about the Vikings and the Saxons and all that good stuff, he plays Finian, the Irish mercenary, on that, and I think he'd be a good light-hearted Bond. So those are the two that are sort of top of my list. So.
It's impressive you've got two answers. Most people don't have any. So that's
yeah. Yeah, we'll cut one of those and save it for someone else. Now for the proper question.
All right, so what was the tweet question?
The tweet question is, who do you think should play the next Felix Leiter?
Okay, so it should be somebody from Texas. Well, all right, let's start with that one.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Given.
Okay, so if it's an older Leiter and it's somebody from Texas, Matthew McConaughey, Owen Wilson, bit more of a contemporary, maybe James Marsden.
Oh, interesting.
Mm.
Yeah, he'd be good.
He would. Yeah.
And as he worked with Jeffrey Wright on Westworld, he could probably give him a few tips. They probably know each other, so they'll know how to play Leiter. But the other thought I had is, we have all this thing about, you know, we're going to get a female James Bond. How about we get a female Leiter and we actually get Cedar Leiter and not Felix Leiter in a reboot?
Mm. Yeah.
And that made me think of, and I'm going to butcher her name now, Adrienne Palicki from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., who played Bobby Morse on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and she did that Wonder Woman pilot.
Yes.
Back several years ago. I think she'd be good as a female CIA agent called Leiter. So.
Yeah,
those are my choices. Yeah, and they're all well. She's not actually from Texas, but she does live in Austin, so I'll give her that one. But
great. That's ridiculous number of answers for those questions.
Yes. Excellent. Fantastic.
Although you do have a Bond lexicon. Yeah. So, if anyone was going to have a lot of answers,
what about you two? Have you given it any thought?
I was going to say, yeah. What are your thoughts on who should play Felix Leiter?
Bond, The Rock. But... Done.
The Rock. Yeah.
I think it's really, I don't think I could answer it unless I knew who the Bond was, because it's so integral to getting the actor right for Bond. If you start thinking about Leiter, you've made the mistake already that, you know, and that's, if they'd done that in the past where, well, they wouldn't do because, you know, they're not picking lighters before they pick bonds, but you get the wrong lighter straight away, you just know it. You just, it just doesn't work, does it? So yeah, I think it's got to be completely dependent on the bond it is. Like if it's a young bond, if they do a period bond and they get like a 25-year-old bond in, you need a 25-year-old lighter or someone around that age to really not, like, otherwise they become a father figure, don't they?
Yeah.
I don't know, Brendan, have you got one? You've been thinking about this, haven't you?
Not really, no. I think I agree. No, because I could throw away all the usual names, can't I? Throw them out there. But I like the idea of James Marsden, actually. I might get on board with that. I said Channing Tatum was my first thought earlier.
Stop! You should stop giving answers. stop giving answers. We've had plenty tonight. You don't need any more.
Well, I was thinking Owen Wilson as well because, like I said, he's a Texan. And then I thought if they went younger, the only other younger actor from Texas I could find was Caleb Landry Jones, who was Banshee in X-Men First Class. And he's got the shaggy hair. But he's a bit weird, so I don't know. He might be a bit out there for a Felix Leiter, but that's who I had.
Mm.
Okay, so Alan, thank you so much for joining us on the James Bond A to Z podcast. If people want to find you online, how can they track you down?
So for my Bond related stuff, you can get me on Twitter at Bond Lexicon, or on Instagram at James Bond Lexicon. And like I said, there's always the books companion website, JamesBondLexicon.online. You can keep up with what we're doing. And of course, I must mention the Honor Majesty's Secret Podcast Network, where you can find a wide variety of shows about various aspects of Bond, which I am also on.
Lovely stuff.
Plenty.
Worth mentioning that you co-authored James Bond Lexicon as well. So I think maybe it's probably fair to credit your co-author as well.
Yeah, my wife never listens to the podcast I'm on anyway. She doesn't even listen to the one she's on. So, but yes, the James Bond Lexicon was co-authored by my wife, Jill. So it's, yeah.
There we go.
Couldn't have done it without her.
There we go. Right. Well, so it just remains for me to say that the James Bond A to Z podcast will return. Yeah. How do people get in touch with the podcast?
If you want to send us an email, that's the podcast at jamesbondatoz.co.uk.
Or you can get us on the socials at jamesbondatoz on Instagram, Twitter and Facebook.
Like I mentioned before, the James Bond A to Z podcast will return next week.
Lovely stuff.
Ciao.
The James Bond A to Z podcast features Tom Butler, Brendan Duffy and Tom Wheatley. The podcast was produced by Tom Wheatley, with music by Tom Ingemels, and artwork supplied by Helen Dolly.
Funny game, right? Sorry, I should have introduced myself, seeing as we're related. Felix Leiter, a brother from Langley. You should have a little faith. You keep your head about you, I think you have him.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.